It is time for the Friday Newscap and some voices from the news this week.
Donald Trump was nearly assassinated. He should know. And he called out political violent rhetoric and said it should stop. And he didn't even make it to Thanksgiving before he's calling for us to be hanged.
The state is facing a challenging budget, but so are many, many Arizonans. I hear over and over again, things are unaffordable, and this is making it easier on them. And I think we owe it to them to deliver that.
Litigation is not off the table, but we are really pushing him hard to make reforms that would prevent that misspending of taxpayer dollars.
She knows perfectly well there is no misuse of funds in the ESA program by the Department of Education, and that the Department of Education has implemented many processes to avoid misuse of funds.
This isn't just a legal issue. This is lawfare by candidates and by parties who don't want the 35% of the people who are independents to be able to participate.
And joining me to talk about the latest in the saga between Mark Kelly, President Trump, and Defense Secretary Hegseth, whether Arizona SNAP recipients could lose their benefits again and more, are Christina Corrieri with Consilium Consulting. Christina, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Mark.
And Gene Woodbury with Creosote Partners. Gene, good morning to you.
Morning. Happy to be here.
So, Gene, let me start with you on what we've been seeing with Mark Kelly. Certainly, after the video that he and others participated in telling members of the military that they do not have to and, in fact, should not follow illegal orders, he's not been quiet about, you know, what folks have been saying about him or why he thinks that he was in the right to make this video. I'm curious what you make of his strategy over the last couple of weeks in terms of really being out there talking about this.
You know, this is the most I've loved Mark Kelly since he's been elected. What I've wanted from Democrats since Trump was reelected is to pick fights like this and not back down, and to say, if you get told to do something wrong or if you get told to do something illegal, you don't actually have to do it. And then once you make that stand, you stick to it and you say, whatever you say about me, I'm going to take that and I'm going to keep moving forward.
Is there something about this particular fight you think that makes it a good one for Kelly? Because he's certainly gotten criticism, and the others in the video, for, you know, for not pointing out, you know, have there been illegal orders? Or if there have been, what are they? You know, some on the right are saying, you know, look, they're just trying to stir the pot here.
Well, it's a good point to make. It's a good point to just say, here's a very simple fact that you, as a member of the military, have this duty to not carry out illegal orders. Now what we're exploring is the illegality of orders that we have seen recently, especially with these boat strikes. But the point of the video is not to determine that. That's got to be determined in a more structured setting. The point of the video is just to say you need to be evaluating this in the field when you're faced with an illegal order.
Christine, I'm curious what you make of this. Like, is this a good fight for Kelly to be picking?
Well, I think it depends on what your goal is. If his goal is to raise his profile nationally, then yeah, it's good for him. If his goal is to have members of the military constantly questioning every single order, I don't know that that's good for the country. So he made a statement that is factually accurate, that members of the military have a duty to not follow clearly illegal orders. But by doing it as a video with six elected Democrats, it becomes inherently political. And it has the suggestion in there that there are perhaps many orders that have been issued that are illegal, rather than having that debate where it should be. If it was truly a nonpartisan reminder about what the military code is, you would be doing that video with retired members of the military, not with politicians. Hmm.
How much do you think this has raised his profile nationally? I mean, obviously, he was on the short list for vice president with Kamala Harris. Last year, he's, you know, as many people point out, a former astronaut. He's raised a ton of money. Has this really raised his profile, do you think?
Oh, I absolutely think so. You cannot turn on any 24-hour news station and not see coverage of what's going on. And that's just going to continue as Trump strikes out at him and he strikes back.
Gene, obviously not getting into the motivation of anybody or, you know, looking at the policy that he was talking about, but from a purely political level, does this help Kelly if he, say, wants to run for president in 3 years?
I think Mark Kelly could have won in this election. So what we're looking at here is, can he demonstrate continued leadership?
And how do you think that he would use this episode to try to do that?
I don't think that this is an instrumental action to get more political leverage. I mean, to the extent that everything is political, sure. But fundamentally, this is his background. This is his expertise and his career. And he's saying that as a principled leader, all of these other people that are his colleagues have a similar duty to act on their principles.
Hmm. Yeah, go ahead, Christina.
You know, I think there are Republicans who are asking legitimate questions about some of the current orders as it relates to the drug boats in the Caribbean, but they're doing it in a fundamentally different way. Rand Paul, for instance, is out there raising questions about this action without congressional approval. But they're not going out pretending it's nonpartisan. I think that video of the six Democratic members, they were pretending it was nonpartisan when it was inherently partisan.
Inherently partisan because they were all
because
of the same party?
They were all elected Democrats. You have put six politicians in a video, right? If you wanted it to be nonpartisan, use non-political figures.
Christina, let me stick with you and ask about a lawsuit that was filed this week by the Citizens Clean Elections Commission against Adrian Fontes, basically saying that the Secretary of State should not have allowed what the party that used to be known as the No Labels Party to become the Arizona Independent Party, essentially saying it's confusing to voters, especially those who choose not to be a member of the party, who are often referred to as independents. And what do you make of this?
It's absolutely going to be confusing to a large majority of Arizonans, because when we use the word independent, people use that colloquially, right? They don't belong to the Republican Party or Democratic Party. I'm independent, right? Well, in Arizona previously, if you were independent, what you actually were party not declared.
Doesn't really roll off the tongue.
Doesn't roll off the tongue. People who are steeped in politics like us and probably most of the listeners understand that that's what PND is. That's not necessarily what most of the people who register as that understand. So we have the second highest number of registrations in Arizona are PND. It's 1.5 million people. If even 10% of the people register as the Arizona Independent Party thinking that's what it means, they are going to lose a significant number of constitutional rights that we hold dear. The first being they're not going to be able to vote in the primary election unless the Independent Party runs a primary.
They can't vote for the Democrat or the Republican.
They can't vote for the Democrat or Republican. Right now, as a person who is a party not declared myself, I have the option to select a Republican ballot or a Democrat ballot. I'm used to being able to do that. If I registered as an Arizona Independent Party, I would no longer have the ability to request that. I also couldn't sign a nominating petition for somebody running as a Republican or Democrat for the legislature or any other office in Arizona. And I think people are not going to understand that, and they may understand that too late. If you're not registered 30 days in advance of an election, you are not going to be able to vote in that election.
Gene, do you buy into the argument that this might be confusing or would be confusing to party non-designated voters?
I think this is a terrible idea. I think that you're going to end up with people being registered with a party they didn't know existed. We have a system now that works for the people we would call independents, people who register without a party. And that system is clearly popular because more people register that way than register as Democrats, and close to the number of people who register as Republicans. This is a system that works. If you want to change it, there's ranked choice voting. Maybe that helps those voters. But what we've seen with Paul Johnson, who's behind this new idea, is that everything he does, he says, is in the service of people who aren't part of the two major parties. But this is going to silence the voices of, you know, independent voters. And what he did with Prop 140, which was a sort of jungle primary top two pseudo ranked choice system, that was also going to bury the voices of independent voters. We need to stick with what we have or think about something that can actually help people.
Is it worthwhile to have, regardless of what it's called, because I guess the legal question is, could the Secretary of State have stopped the name change? And I'm not a lawyer. I don't know. This will be litigated in court, and you know, this will be for the courts to decide. But I guess, is there, Gene, in theory, a place for people who, like an organizing place, maybe call it a party, maybe call it something else, but for people who do not want to be members of the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, like, is there a place for something like an independent party, if not called that, and maybe if not in the form that current organizers are putting it in?
Well, I think what we've seen, unfortunately or not, is that it hasn't worked out. The Green Party doesn't fulfill that. The Libertarian Party doesn't fulfill that. The No Labels Party, which is now the Arizona Independent Party, also didn't fulfill that. So that isn't working in our current structure. Maybe there's a room for it. Like, maybe that's a good idea, but it's not going to work with the structure we have now.
I would say there's always opportunities for a third party. We have them in the Libertarian Party and the Green Party. They have remained small, but historically you've had a third party candidates that their ideas then get absorbed by one of the two major parties. The problem is not that there is an additional party on there. The problem is the name and the intent to even if it's not the intent to deceive, it will in practice deceive some number of people. Also, I think the law specifically allows the Secretary of State to recognize a new party. I don't believe there's actually a mechanism to allow the renaming of an existing party, and that's what that lawsuit is about.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the courts say. Gene, let me ask you about what's going on between the state and the federal government. We saw, of course, during the government shutdown that ended not that long ago, that SNAP benefits, the food assistance benefits, were lost for a lot of folks, and there's a lot of consternation about that. Well, now we're hearing from the USDA that those benefits in states like Arizona could be rolled back again if the state does not turn over information to the federal government, which says it's trying to root out, you know, waste, fraud and abuse is the phrase that they're using. Governor Hobbs has so far said that she's not going to turn that information over, and it doesn't seem as though that's going to change. So, like, how do you see this playing out?
I'm really proud of Governor Hobbs here for refusing to comply with something that really seems like it's designed to prey on hungry families who might have mixed immigration statuses. You know, it's perfectly legal, regardless of your immigration status, to apply for SNAP benefits on behalf of your citizen children, for example. That's something that would be missed in a mass reporting of data. So this is one of the better things I've seen from Hobbs in terms of pushing back on the Trump administration, especially now that in a very short amount of time, we've seen SNAP funds leveraged in this way.
Is it a tough thing for her to do, and maybe a tough thing to continue? I don't justify is maybe not the right word, but to explain doing if and when Arizonans lose their benefits because the state has not turned that information over.
Well, this is something we saw with the shutdown negotiations. We got to this point after the longest shutdown in history where this was clearly the issue. Will you back down or will you keep up the fight given that SNAP funds are being used as leverage? And the mistake was that they backed down. And so in the end, it just looked like a lot of Sturm und Drang for nothing, right? And what Hobbs needs to do here is learn from that and stay true on the path of protecting Arizonans.
Christine, I'm curious what you make of this. You served in the Ducey administration, and I don't think this particular issue came up at that point, but he obviously served while President Trump was in his first term. Do you think this is the right move for the governor to withhold the information at the risk of losing this federal money?
You know, the people I feel sorry for are the 850,000 people in Arizona who are on SNAP. Over 300,000 of them are kids. Many of the rest are disabled individuals. They are elderly individuals. And they're going to have to go through a lot of uncertainty. I think that Governor Hobbs has picked a dangerous path that is going to put all of them in jeopardy to potentially protect a few that may not be here legally. It is true what Gene said, that citizen children of undocumented immigrants have a right to be on SNAP if they meet the other eligibility criteria. But what wasn't pointed out is before the passage of H.R. 1, there were certain classes of undocumented immigrants that were also eligible for SNAP. So, for instance, individuals who were paroled into the country, as we saw happen by the tens and hundreds of thousands under Joe Biden's presidency. Also, individuals who may have had a deportation order, but that deportation order was withheld. So in H.R. 1, they made significant changes to who is eligible, making it only individuals who are legally present in the United States that have had that green card for a certain period of time. States were given 120 days to comply with those new requirements. So the Department of Ag does have a legitimate interest in ensuring that states are complying and rooting out what now would be fraud, waste, and abuse because of those changes in eligibility.
Is that is the USDA the best organization to do that as opposed to the state? Because the state, my understanding is the state already like looks tries to make sure that people who aren't eligible or shouldn't be getting these benefits or any benefits aren't getting them.
Correct. The state has the obligation to do that. But understand that historically and currently, the feds pay 100% of benefits. So if the state gets it wrong, the state isn't risking anything. The one who's ultimately paying is, well, the taxpayer, but also through the federal government. And so they have an interest in making sure that the states are doing it correctly.
Gene, obviously, again, taking the human perspective out of this, like obviously people and food and their food security, from a purely political perspective, Christina mentioned this is kind of a risky strategy for the governor. She's obviously on the ballot in 2026. Could this be an issue that helps or hurts her in her reelection campaign, do you think?
Well, like Christina said, there's many people in Arizona who depend on these benefits. And I think that those people are alienated when they hear terms like fraud, waste, and abuse. I don't think that they think that feeding their children is fraud. I don't think that feeding their children is waste. I don't think that feeding their children is abuse. And so when Governor Hobbs stands up and says, I'm on your side, that's a message that they're going to resonate with.
So two other candidates who are on the ballot in 2026, Attorney General Chris Mays, Superintendent of Public Instruction Tom Horn. They're in a little bit of a tiff this week over ESAs. Chris Mays says that she, I think the phrase was, litigation is on the table over the Education Department's policy of letting ESA school voucher purchases under $2,000 go through, and then auditing them later and trying to claw back the money if there's a problem. Christina, this has been such a big issue, and in the school superintendent's race will continue to be a huge issue in the primary and going forward. What do you make of this back and forth?
You know, this is inherently political. The ESA issue has been for a long time. I think that Superintendent Horn was able to snap back and say that they have referred multiple cases over to the AG for prosecution, including, I think, one case where somebody spent 40-something thousand dollars on crystals, and that the attorney general has declined to prosecute them. Look, it's complicated. It's a new program. There are going to be learning curves. They have to figure out how to get these funds, you know, out in a reasonable amount of time, but with those checks. And he's put some risk-based software in. I think this is a popular program. It's a growing program. I believe there's about 100,000 kids in the program right now. With a program that grows so fast, it also needs administrative resources to be able to do that. And ultimately, I think the legislature should appropriate more funding to the department to get those tools that they need.
So, Gene, obviously, Democrats, Governor Hobbs on down, have been trying to she tried to just undo the universal ESA program. Republicans in the legislature said no way. They didn't say it quite that nicely, but they said no way. The Democrats tried to put some what they called reasonable guardrails on the program, presumably to make sure that money that went out was going out for the right purpose. Republicans in the legislature have pretty consistently said much what Christina said. This is a popular program. We're not looking to make any changes to it. So I guess the legal question comes down to how – and again, I'm not a lawyer, but like, is it okay that the money goes out and is only looked into after? But politically, this seems like it's, again, going to continue to be a huge issue up until and maybe beyond November of next year.
Well, I think Attorney General Mays is right that this is probably not a legal way to disburse funds as, you know, a state agency, and that needs to be explored. I think that the interesting question for me is the political position that puts Tom Horn in. He is now facing on his right, which is not something I thought existed, a primary challenger backed by Turning Point,
Kimberly Yee, state treasurer,
Kimberly Yee, saying, you know, Tom Horn, you've gone too far. You've put too many guardrails on the ESA program. I'm going to primary you. And then, of course, on the left, he's being challenged by a Democrat with the party line of this is a system that's just fundamentally not working. So Tom Horn is in this position of having to figure out, how do I administer this program correctly and legally without just imploding politically?
Which seems like a really interesting, very quickly, Christina, a really interesting place for someone like Tom Horn to be.
It is. But I also want to add, there's nothing unusual about auditing funds on the back end in certain programs. There are grants that both the federal government and the state government do to nonprofits or other groups where the money is sent out. And on the back end, when they send their reporting, it's audited and money is clawed back if it's inappropriately spent. And nobody disagrees with that. I don't think that what the department is doing for those lower dollar purchases is really any different than that. Everybody wants to go after actual fraud. It should be found and it should be prosecuted, but they also have to find a system that works.
All right, we'll have to leave it there. Christina Corrieri, Gene Woodbury, thanks to you both for coming. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.